Blog Talk Radio.
Today is Monday, March 20th, 2016, and this is Foxology Today. I am Silver Ray Fox, your host. Thanks for tuning in and happy day to you. I hope you are having a great day already. Well, you know what you need to do is, well, I'm going to suggest that you do, I should say, is be sure to get in position for it, you know, with an attitude of expectancy. And you just might be pleasantly surprised at, you know, all the surprises that can happen when you expect it. I heard a short interview this morning on the gospel station I was listening to online, and I think it was Jonathan Nelson has a new CD out. It was one of the recordings is Anything Can Happen, and I'm certainly a firm believer of that. So it might be a little something that happens that just makes you go like, oh, wow, or it might be something big that takes your breath away. Whatever, I encourage you to look for good things, expect great things, and know that there's usually a brighter thing on the other side of our tests, troubles, and trials. So expect good and wonderful things to come your way. You know, I have a special guest today who knows exactly what I'm talking about. Chloe Taylor Brown is an author, speaker, business executive, entrepreneur, radio host, and that's just some of the things she does. She's an all-around phenomenal woman. I'm so happy to have her with me today. She's my special guest, and we're going to be talking about her new book, I Can Laugh Again, From the Valley of Grief to a Glimpse of Heaven, and all the many gifts she's sharing with others to empower them with her life's message. So glad to have you today. Welcome, Chloe.
Thank you, Silver. I'm so happy to be here with you.
Yeah, and I know we chatted briefly, just real briefly, before the show started, and you said you were having an amazing day.
I am, like, and just as you were saying, expecting something good, I was driving down the freeway today, and got a call, seems to be out of the blue, but I don't think that things happen out of the blue. You projected it, and it was something really good. So you're just, we're on the same wavelength today.
Well, I'm not surprised to hear that. That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, there's so much to talk about and so little time, so I think we better get at it. You know, you're really a very special lady. I follow you on Facebook. We're Facebook friends, and you're just always doing amazing things, and you have a lovely family, and it's just such an inspiring connection, and so I want to thank you for that. But let's talk about, you know, everything has a beginning and a backdrop, and you know, you have a history with some very wonderful things and very fascinating professional background. So why don't we start with a little of that? Where did you grow up, Chloe?
I grew up in a very small rural town in Mississippi, Holly Springs,
really?
Mississippi. And that is right between Tupelo, Mississippi, and Memphis, Tennessee, if you know those two towns and cities. But it was a very humble beginning. I'm one of eight children, and I'm the oldest girl. I have two older brothers, myself and two younger brothers and three little sisters. And we grew up pretty normal for kids growing up in the country. And until my mother was killed in a car accident, I was 13. And of course, there was a paradigm crash, and we all went to live with my grandmother. And things really were never the same again, because my grandmother was really overwhelmed with us. And at 13 is when you really need your mom. But I realized, Silver, that I had to really help my grandmother with my little sisters, even though I was grieving a lot. She just needed me, so I instantly became big sister, little mama. And I think that's where my ability to encourage and inspire women and girls really started.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I listened to that, what you just said, too, of course, your grandmother was experiencing her own grief as well. And so I'm sure trying to take care of all of you, it was feeling pretty complicated to her. And God just blessed you to have the strength and the wisdom as a kid to step in and do that. And, you know, I know that that's part of also your story, and I'm glad you shared that. That was something that I didn't know, that, again, offers encouragement to people who, you know, we go through those trials that we think that's the worst thing that could have ever happened to us. How are we possibly going to ever get to the other side of it? And you have just blossomed into this amazing person who is using everything that you've experienced and learned to share with others. So at that time, I know, you know, I'm sure you still spent several years still in Mississippi, but you went on to launch a wonderful career. You got an education in the fashion industry and went on to become a very successful top model.
Yes, that was my dream. As a matter of fact, that was kind of planted into me, ironically. On the same day of my mother's funeral, there were relatives that were coming in, and one came in and she says, "Oh, you're tall and you have a dimple. You could be a model." And I really didn't know. I didn't know. Well, first of all, dimple has nothing to do with it, but being tall and slim. But I really didn't know what a model was. But the way she looked at me when she said it made me feel good. And so I kind of held on to that. And by the time I was 15, I realized what it was. And so I started saying it out loud. And at 16, my Aunt Anita really got me from my grandmother and really told me who I was and who I could become from that, and trained me and groomed me. All the women in her neighborhood, it was a college town, Rust College, a historically black college, they all got together and rallied around me, and they just taught me how to be. And they told me that I could be a model, but they wanted me to go to college first. And so I did, and right after college, and of course I had my big dreams, and I knew I wasn't going to be a traditional life, and I was going to marry someone that was non-traditional. So ironically, and we know it's not a coincidence, I met my husband in college, and he was a basketball player in college, and we both had these big dreams, and he became a professional basketball player, and I went off to San Francisco and Milan, and we realized our dreams really early, and it seemed once we got into that mode, it seemed almost effortlessly, but we did work hard.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like, you know, there was a lot of divine order and stars lined up for you, because it's a beautiful, beautiful sounding story. And I know that even so, there had to be some challenges. But I love the fact that these women embraced you. And again, it makes me see more clearly why you share your gifts so freely, and you think it's so very important. When you wrote your book, I can Laugh Again. Chloe, what was the idea and the impetus, the inspiration with that? What point in your life? I know, I think I could probably safely say that book was probably resonating in you long before it actually became a publication. So when did that start?
Absolutely.
When did that start inside you?
Well, if I were to kind of fast forward from having that ideal life, and my husband and I decide how many kids we wanted to have and how old we were going to be and how many years they were going to be apart, and everything was rolling just as we wanted it, with a few glitches. You know, nothing is perfect. But our third child, who was our baby at that time, fell in our pool, and he didn't survive that tragic accident. So I'm the mother of four, and one of my children is an angel. And that book is the story of, it's a love story with me and my child and my husband and our child, and between my husband and I, and it's just about love. So the foundation of that, the rock of it, is justice, death. And so I do juxtapose talking about, you know, my growing up a little bit in the right places. The book is really a masterpiece. It really is. I wrote it a couple of years after Justin died, and this was in 96. But when I wrote it, I could never do anything with it because it was just too painful to even go back and read it. But in 2014, a friend of mine who had known me for many years in college and to now really encouraged me and read it out loud to me twice. And by doing that, I got the courage to say, now is time. And so it was published December 2nd, 2015. And when I read it as a reader, I was really inspired, Silver, by the young woman that I was. I really was, as though it wasn't even me, because I thought, wow, she really did go through a lot, and she was able to really get through a lot and keep her faith. It was doubt. She doubted at times, and she became really angry. But it really did a lot for me reading it after all these years.
Well, I want to go back to that time when the tragedy occurred, if you don't mind, because it was the place where you started your book and wrote it. And I can say from a very similar experience that I really do understand. I know so few people can say that, but I lost a child at the same age. So I know that that is just one of the hardest things that anybody could possibly go through. But let's talk about you and what that was like, having your family, what I'm really looking for you to share is how you pulled together to garner enough strength, because I know the grief in itself is overwhelming.
Completely overwhelming. Well, I had two older children, Jade and Taylor. Jade was 10, my oldest and only daughter, and my oldest son was 7. And my husband, he was so very strong. Even in his weakness, he was strong for me. But you do know that a lot of marriages don't survive something so tragic. But we did, and we've been married for over 30 years. But he was just there for the kids, and he allowed me to be how I needed to be, which was no rhyme or reason, because there's no grieving is your own personal way, how you grieve. There's no cookie cutter way to grieve. But he was there for me, and my sisters and my brothers and my cousins and my aunts and my uncles and people from the fashion industry, and we had so many people that cared about us. And at the end is my faith. It wavered, but I came back to that because it's what sustained me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that's the thing that I think most anybody can say is the great sustainer. That's the one thing that keeps you waking up and pushing forward each day when things like that happen. When you began to write the book, and it sounds like it was just a necessary thing that you had to pour that out, did it seem that way to you at that time? Were you needing to just express it, since it did take you several years before it actually became a book that we can buy now? Was it part of a purging for you? How did that all feel to you at that time?
Out to be that, but one of the ways that I was, my husband had just retired from his 15-year professional basketball career, and at the time of Justin's death, I was still modeling. But, there comes a time when there's a slow season for modeling, and you have to face yourself. And so that was during that time that I had to face myself. And I wasn't paying very much attention to my husband and his grieving, because I was, grief, being in that type of grief, you can become really selfish and self-absorbed. And you can say rightfully so, but nevertheless, you can become self-absorbed with your own pain and your own grief. And so one day I actually saw my husband, and I just felt horrible. And my prayer was, how can I help my husband? And I heard so clear and so bold to write. And God didn't tell me what to write, but I know that was God's spirit or my higher self. It wasn't me and that grief telling me, it was someplace higher. And so I started to write, and the writing was good because I could tell a good story. I had to really become a writer, though. I had to be trained, but I could tell a good story. So I initially was writing about my childhood and modeling because that's what I thought I should write about. And it was good enough to get a literary agent. And after maybe working with the agent for a couple of months, the person who had introduced me to him and him to me told him my story about my loss of my son. And he asked me, how did I get through it? I felt that he was really invading, but and so I wanted to get rid of him, and I said, I don't know. And he says, well, I think that's important for you to know, and I think you should write, you know, a few pages about it so you can know about it. Well, he was very clever. He was getting me to write that. And I didn't really know, so I had to start at the beginning. And that's how I realized how I got through it. Because I wasn't through it. I was still going through it. And even after I finished that book, I finished it when my 16-year-old was a newborn, which was about 3 years after Justin died. So I wasn't really, you know, it takes a while. But I could tell that story, and it stopped when the story ended. Well, I won't tell the end, but it was not now because I finished it when he was 16. He's 16 now, so he was a newborn. So I was writing it because once I started, I was compelled to get it all out. But once I wrote it, Silver, I couldn't read it again. It was just too painful. I'm like, who wrote this? How did I even get it out? So, yes, it was very cathartic. And even now, all these years later, it has really healed, started the healing process for my husband and my daughter.
Yeah. I chuckle because I know that it is pretty, it's a pretty incredible process that you really cannot have any bullet points that, you know, this is how it's going to go. But it's just so wonderful to hear how you have had it all come together for you. And I know that that's not your only publication. You're doing some very positive things, additional positive things to offer encouragement and empowerment to people. Let's talk about some of those. I know you've got Girl Swag as well.
I love Girl Swag. It was, well, you know what? It's kind of, you can't say which is your favorite book. It's like saying, which is your favorite child? But, you know, they all have their own special things. And Girl Swag is truly a masterpiece. Each chapter has been mastered. There are 12 chapters. And when those 12 chapters come together, it is truly a masterpiece. And I say that because it is a progressive and positive process up that when the girls and young ladies work a chapter and complete that chapter and go put into their life what they have drawn out of themselves based on the questions, they transform and they blow their own minds with what they're creating for themselves. They understand who they are, what they're made of, their substance, and they know how to put that into their life and transform themselves. It is truly, it's so amazing, and I love watching the girls and being with them. I love working with the women, too, but the girls, wow, they seem to get it, and they're so girly, you know. They giggle. I love it.
They're really excited. I know. I guess some women may not be as obvious about how they feel about it, but I know that they do appreciate the additional tools for life, the additional enhancement that you have to offer. I mean, how could they not? I mean, we're always constantly evolving, and to have someone who emanates that, share that, has got to be, you know, just a special time for everybody. But what I'd like for you to tell us in that book, Girl Swag, I know all of it's important, but I know there are things like confidence and being a lady, things like that. Could you share just a few things that you really feel very passionate about in those chapters?
Yes. The first chapter is about the value of yourself. And this whole curriculum follows my personal excellence profile, which is the tool that I use in corporate America. It is the foundation of almost all the work that I do. So the first chapter and also the first ability that we have to really go far in life is an appreciation of who we are. So that first chapter is about valuing yourself, and there are processes, there are really some great questions that draw out of the girls and build them up. And the second chapter is about your ability to perceive and trust your gut. So they learn how to trust their gut and their instincts and follow them and not dismiss that. And then the third chapter is about making decisions about what you perceive. Because a lot of times, and kids may be a little more flexible than adults, because by the time we are adults, we get things talked out of us and we think we're supposed to be a certain way. And we're just supposed to be ourselves. So in the third chapter, it's about making your decisions, because we have to make our decisions based on what we perceive. And the decision making is our setup for our life, because that's what we want to accomplish, whether we want to bake a great chocolate cake, or we're going to go buy it, or we're going to order it. You know, you got to make a decision of how you're going to get that cake. It's the same process of what career you're going to choose. It was the same process of me deciding based on the information that I had that I wanted to be a model. And then you make that decision, then you communicate that. That's the next chapter, communicate. You communicate to yourself. You communicate to the people that matter, because if you communicate to the wrong people, they're going to try to talk you out of it because they're not as big as you. They don't understand you. And when you communicate it boldly and energetically, you're going to be drawing and building rapport. That's an ability of chapter two. So there are 12 of them. I get excited about all of them. They all work independently, but they work together as well.
Yes, those are very strong messages that I know, too, that all everybody needs. But particularly, I understand the focus on the girls. And right now, and the younger generation particularly, those are values that can be implanted that you never, ever lose. So that's really wonderful. Well, I know you got a couple of others. Tell us about those, too.
Well, before I move on, if you don't mind, I'm doing something that's so fun. I'm creating for the first time a mother-daughter event. And so it's a mother-daughter, but it could be grandmother, it could be aunt, it could be sisters. But a girly-girl event where adult women and young women and girls are going to be at one place, and it's called a Pink Affair. And what we're going to be doing is sharing all this together and letting women and girls know how important it is.
I think I may have lost Chloe. If you're just tuning
there?
In, I've been talking with Chloe Taylor Brown and about her newest book, I Can Laugh Again, From the Valley of Grief to a Glimpse of Heaven. She's been sharing a very powerful story of her life story, growing up in rural Mississippi and going on to get a fabulous start in fashion education and in professional modeling. And she's written several books, and we've been talking about those. And she was just about to tell us about an wonderful event that you've got planned for April 30th. And Chloe, you can go on with that.
Okay, so it's a Pink Affair. It's a mother-daughter soiree in Atlanta, Georgia. And that's going to be, again, on April 30th. It's a brunch. And we're bringing mothers and daughters and women, young women and girls together in the same space. And we're going to be talking about these things and having a good time. We have sponsors.
Chloe, if
we're
you can hear me, would you disconnect and recall again? And those of you who are listening, I'm sorry about the fact that the call has dropped. And I'm looking at her, and I see her on the board, but I cannot figure out why I can't connect with her. Let's try again. Chloe, are you there?
I'm there, so I guess I've just said too much about the Pink Affair. I'm so excited about it.
I'm not quite sure why I can't hear you anymore, Chloe. I'm going to go ahead and wrap up, because I know this is your third attempt trying to get back online. And what I am going to do is ask you and ask Chloe if we can go for a part two of her interview, perhaps still this week. She's got so much that she wants to share and so much that I want her to share with all of you as well. And if I can't get her in this next attempt, Chloe?
I'm here.
Hello.
And it looks like I'm not going to be able to reconnect with Chloe. Not quite sure why the board is not responding to me connecting with her, but I want to thank you all for listening. And as I said, I'm going to make an attempt to schedule a part two so that we can get all of the information that we need to follow up and stay close to what Chloe Taylor Brown is doing. Again, my guest has been Chloe Taylor Brown, and we had some type of technical difficulties. I'm looking at her. She's still online on the board, but unable to connect with me. But I want to thank you for spending this time with me today, and I hope you did enjoy this part of the show. We'll get a part two together for you. Please tell your friends on Facebook and Twitter about Foxology Today, and I'm going to look forward to talking to you again. Hopefully, we'll get that part two scheduled this week. In the meantime, make it a great day. Be good, be blessed, and be awesome. Thanks for tuning in.